So tonight I'm going to talk about self-compassion. And I was actually intrigued by something that Lupko said last time when he was talking about people that he felt had too much self-compassion. And I was interested in that idea. I think I'll begin by saying that love, the word love, like the word truth, like the word healing, these are in some ways proxy words for the sacred. In fact, the Bible even says God is love. And insofar as they're proxy words for the sacred, there's a way that our human minds and our human conceptions can't fully grasp what love is in its full totality. You know, it's just, you know, similar to our relationship to truth. You know, what is the truth of human life? Well, you know, what is the great Tao? The great Tao can't be put into words. And any truth that we have is necessarily partial. It's not that we don't have any truth, but we only have a piece of it. And of course, as is usually the case, if the piece I have is particularly one-sided and partial, then I'm probably holding on to it with white knuckles and, you know, I know this is true. Don't tell me it's wrong. You know, that kind of thing. Much in the same way with love. You know, I think if we have a more partial, one-sided take on love, we might be a little more defensive about it or a little more loud about it. I think when we realize that truth and love are, in fact, proxy words for the sacred, there's a kind of humility there. Just this knowing that being human, I'm never going to have the full picture. And I'll say also that it's just the nature of love, I think, because it's such a, you know, a, you might say, a high commodity kind of value in human relationships. A lot gets called love that isn't quite love, you know, and I think that's obvious from even the most casual survey of friendships and relationships, that there's a lot that gets called love that yeah, there's some love there, but there's a lot of dysfunction and selfishness and so forth mixed in also. And I think that's true in people's self-love as well as in interpersonal loves. And so just, I guess it makes me wonder, there's part of me that suspects that there's no such thing as too much true love. There's no such thing as too much, you know, say divine love. But the too much comes when it's love mixed with some other kind of dysfunction, and that can get too much very quickly. So self-love. It's funny, certainly in the classical Buddhist texts and in the classical Christian texts, There's a basic equivalency between love of others and love of self. Certainly this is made quite explicit in the Buddhist texts. And even in the Christian texts, Jesus' commandment, love thy neighbor as thyself, implies a kind of symmetry, that loving the neighbor is as important as loving the self. And so I don't know that this was something, you know, the wisdom traditions certainly valorize love of self not being more important, but being as important as loving others. And it's funny, and in the history of Western civilization, during the late Middle Age period and the Renaissance, there was a tremendous rise of individualism. And, this attention on individuals and their rights and their desires and all this. A lot of that culminated in the American Revolution and the Constitution and all that. And in many ways, I think Puritanism was a reaction to that. And Puritanism was really one of the first places where we saw this astonishing difference that in the Puritan worldview, if I walked around being pleasant and nice to everyone else, but I hated myself and was abusive to myself, that I would be a good person. And Puritanism is a very effective, you know, shame-driven and shame-producing kind of mechanism. And it's funny how powerfully this mechanism has impacted American culture. I mean, certainly corporate America has a lot to do with keeping it alive. But I think there are so many good, decent people who would never dream of, you know, at least on a good day when they're not triggered or something, they would never dream of being hurtful or insulting to anyone around them. But their self-talk is incredibly abusive. And that's just taken for granted, you know. And that's certainly problematic from the point of view of the original message of Christianity or from the original message of Buddhism. So I think the first thing I would say about self-love is that, you know, when we think of all the ways that we would like to be treating others and all the ways that we do strive to treat others, you know, the politeness, the kindness, the consideration, the patience, the forgiveness, you know, all these qualities that we bring to others, can we bring them in the same measure to ourselves? You know, not more necessarily, but just can we bring those in the same measure to ourselves? Can we treat ourselves the way that I would treat another? Can I treat myself with the same basic courtesy, basic human respect that I would treat a stranger with, you know? And so that's one part of self-love. And I think it's a tremendous challenge because for a variety of reasons, this culture has wounded all of us and has, you know, we've been wounded with shame. And shame is just the core message that, you know, I am worthless. I have no value. I don't belong. My being is a mistake. This sort of thing. And it takes a long time to heal shame. It takes a long time to, among the other things, not be hypnotized by the message of the message of pain that arises. Now, relatedly, I'll say, and this is an idea that fascinates me. There's a researcher, Kristen Neff, who has I have tremendous respect for her. She's done a lot of research on self-compassion, and she really is a powerful advocate of self-compassion. And she says the number one reason people give for why they aren't more self-compassionate is that they're afraid if they're too soft on themselves, they'll let themselves get away with anything. They really believe that their internal judge plays a crucial role in keeping them in line and on track. In other words, they confuse self-compassion with self-indulgence. And then later on, she talks about self-compassion enhances rather than undermines motivation. And I think that idea that self-compassion would, if I really gave into self-compassion, that I'd be soft and I'd let myself get away with anything. I think that points to a profound misunderstanding of the nature of love. We live in a society that is so geared toward gratification, so geared toward, you know, I can get the thing that I want, you know. And then I think it's not a stretch from there to start to think about love through the lens of, oh, love, someone loves me, they're going to give me what I want. You know, this sort of thing. Which is not what love is. I mean, there are in any loving relationship, certainly there will be aspects of it that will be very enjoyable and things that I want, but that's not the whole of the experience. And I think a way I want to frame this is talking about my day job. You know, I'm a teacher. I'm a high school teacher. And so imagine if I went in and I said to my classes, you don't need to do anything. You know, you can do whatever you want. You can watch videos. I'll give you ice cream and cookies. And you have any questions, I'll answer them. But I'm not going to force you to do anything, you know. Now, of course, there are some students who would think that that was ideal. You know, there's some students who would love that, you know. But if I behave that way, that would be irresponsible. In fact, my school probably pretty quickly would get mad at me if I were that kind of teacher, you know? And so giving the students what they want is not necessarily the most loving thing to do to them. And in fact, from a certain point of view, giving them what they want in that way is actually cruel because it deprives them of what they need, which is an education, which in fact is something much more valuable than pleasure in the moment. And so because I actually do love my students, I push them hard. I make sure they're learning. Every day we're doing work, you know. But I'll also say that, you know, if my attitude was, you know, if I went in there like a drill sergeant, you know, you little losers, I'm going to whip you into shape, you know, like that sort of thing. I mean, maybe there'd be some kids who'd be motivated by that, but there'd be a lot of kids who'd be turned off by that also. Part of being a teacher is, on the one hand, having the warmth and having the connection so the kids feel heard, so they feel valued, they feel nurtured, all that, and holding up the high standards. In the pedagogical literature, this is known as being a warm demander in the classroom. This balance between emotional connection and holding up high standards. And similarly, in say, a friendship, which is a kind of love relationship, a friend isn't a yes man. A friend isn't someone who just tells me what I want to hear, you know? Because the person who tells me nothing but what I want to hear, in a way, is depriving me of important information. And it's just kind of the nature of life that often the feedback that I most need or the information I most need is something I really don't want to hear, you know? And a good friend will be someone who very gently tells me that thing, makes me face that thing that I really don't want to hear, but is something I need to take in, you know? And so I think it's very important to realize that self-love very much is about that balance. This balance is classically represented in Buddhism by the two tankas that are right behind me. Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, he carries a flaming sword of discrimination, and Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. Avalokiteshvara is all about just the warmth and compassion, just accepting human beings exactly as they are, accepting them and all their difficulties and all their struggles, just this incredibly nurturing, loving, kind presence. Manjushri is a little bit intimidating. Manjushri represents this tremendous wisdom, this bodhisattva who was the teacher of 10 Buddhas. His flaming sword cuts truth from falsehood, you know. And there's really this deep understanding that wisdom and compassion are, as it were, they have a kind of yin-yang relationship in one's journey in Buddhism. And so I would very much frame self-love in those terms, that self-love, on the one hand, is about this incredible nurturing. It's about this complete acceptance of where I am in this moment, with all my faults, with all my shortcomings, a complete, utter acceptance and love for where I am in this moment, holding that fully, and also having a fierce commitment toward personal growth work, a fierce commitment toward excellence. And really, how can I say, pursuing excellence in every area of my life is one of the greatest gifts I can give myself. You know, that is a very powerful gesture of self-love, to pursue excellence in all things. I can't have that without the nurturing, and I can't, you know, if I have that without the nurturing, then it's just this taskmaster kind of existence, which is very shallow. And then if I have just the nurturing without the ambition, well, then that's stagnation, so that's not fulfilling either. There needs to be that dynamic balance between both. And finally, I think I'll say about self-love that in my own view, I think Jung's work really shines a tremendous light on self-love that we didn't have before. Jung's, and to some extent this was present in Freud, but much more in Jung, this idea that we're confronted by otherness in the psyche, that, you know, ego controls a portion of the psyche, but so much of our psyche is not under the control of ego, and it confronts us as otherness. And how are we relating to those others? Are we listening to those others? Do we have cordial relationships with those others? Do we have hostile relationships with those others? You know, can we make of our heart a kind of banquet hall where those others can come and we can sit down together? You know, that sort of thing. And of course, many of the places that have been othered, many of the places that ego does other, are places that have been in pain. You know, pain, I don't want to feel that, it gets othered, you know. And so when we're doing the work of integration, the first articulation often is of the pain, the discomfort, the shame, the rage, the grief. And doing the work of self-love, part of that is simply about sitting with that, just allowing each voice inside to say what it needs to say, to feel the grief, to feel the anger, to feel the shame, just feel everything. You could say part of the path of self-love is simply growing our container to feel more and more. And the way, of course, we grow our container is just by every day leaning a little more into our edge, wherever that edge is. You know, there's always, for all of us, there's always a kind of leading edge of growth. You know, where is that edge? And can I lean into that each day a little more and a little more, you know? Head has all these fantasies about wanting to answer all the questions at once, wanting to get to the goal at once. You know, we can't do that. That's not human. All we can do is, you know, all I can do at any point is just take the next step of my journey without knowing where all those steps are going to lead. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. Shared it on Zoom. So at the top, I have this famous passage from St. Paul, where he talks about love in the first letter of the Corinthians. And I'll just read the second paragraph. Love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And so a very high bar he's establishing for what love is there. And then the famous quote that God is love, and then I already quoted part of this from Dr. Kristen Neff. From Rumi, your task is not to seek love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. And there really is a way, how can I say, it's a cliche to say, but it's true, that love is the strongest force in the universe. It's a cliche because everyone has heard the words and very few people have had the experience. And that's really what a cliche is, when people have just the empty words and they don't have the experience. But really, it is a tremendously powerful force. And the more we can just break down the barriers and allow it in, the more powerfully it comes into our lives. The Sage of Concord, Mr. Emerson, says, what lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. Hermann Hesse says, within you there is a stillness and a sanctuary to which you can retreat at any time and be yourself. Joseph Campbell said, the privilege of a lifetime is being who you are. That one is wonderful. That one would make a fantastic affirmation just to read that every day. Carl Rogers says, the curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. And that paradox is really at the heart of what I was talking about earlier, that I need the self-acceptance in order to push myself in the direction of growth. I grow most effectively when I accept myself. Abraham Joshua Heschel says, just to be is a blessing. Just to live is holy. Maslow says, you will either step forward into growth or you will step backwards into safety. The Jungian, Marie-Louise von Franz, the disciple of Jung, said, the ego must be able to listen attentively and to give itself without any further design or purpose to that inner urge toward growth. People living in this culture, more securely rooted than our own, have less trouble in understanding that it is necessary to give up the utilitarian attitude of conscious planning in order to make way for the inner growth of the personality. And everything about the way that the strategic mind has its plans and has its agendas, and that actually gets in the way of our growth process. Charles Bukowski says, can you remember who you were before the world told you who you should be? That's one of the deep questions there. Thich Nhat Hanh says, to be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself. Eartha Kitt says, it's about falling in love with yourself and sharing that love with someone who appreciates you, rather than looking for love to compensate for a self-love deficit. Very powerful dating advice there. The Dalai Lama says, if you don't love yourself, you can't love others. You will not be able to love others. If you have no compassion for yourself, then you are not able to develop compassion for others. So really talking to the interdependence that I love myself through loving others, and I love others through loving myself, that rather than being mutually exclusive, they actually feed each other in a feedback loop. Jack Kornfield says, if your compassion does not include yourself, it is incomplete. Very basic Buddhism there. Shakti Gawain says, my willingness to be intimate with my own deep feelings creates a space for intimacy with others. That amazing woman, Bell Hooks, says, if we give our children sound self-love, they will be able to deal with whatever life puts before them. Tara Brock says, awakening self-compassion is often the greatest challenge people face on the spiritual path. And I don't know if that was always true in all historical times and places, but it certainly is true in our own historical time. John O'Donohue says, when you are compassionate with yourself, you trust your soul, which you will let guide your life. Your soul knows the geography of your destiny better than you do. That one is great. Christian Chenoweth says, if you can learn to love yourself and all the flaws, you can love other people so much better, and that makes you so happy. Tara Banks says, self-love has very little to do with how you feel about your outer self. It's about accepting all of yourself. And finally, Steve Maraboli says, how would your life be different if you stopped allowing other people to dilute or poison your day with their words and opinions? Let today be the day you stand strong in the truth of your beauty and journey throughout your day without attachment to the validation of others.